Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
When she first went missing, we got people calling saying, oh, we thought we saw her here, we thought we saw her there, but no, nothing. It just like she just completely vanished from Wilmington. Even though Emily was a young adult, I would tell any parent, just because they're an adult and they feel like they, you know, grown, know everything, you still need to keep up with your child, know their friends, know where they're going, know where they're hanging out, know what they're doing. I know a lot of times when they reach, you know, y'all reach a certain age, parents don't need to know this. But even if you're not a teenager, if you're not a youth, know your child. Get to really know your children and communicate. Keep the line of communication open at all times. Because you never know what's going to happen. And this is what I've learned. Even though we talk, I still didn't know all her friends. It's some stuff, you know, about her, I still didn't know. And we talked. And she tell me what she wanted to tell me. And, you know, she go out, and she do what she do. But just keep communication open as best you can. Because you never don't want nobody to knock on your door and you can say, okay, I don't know what my daughter had on tonight. I don't know where she went, who she was with, you know? How can you cope with somebody missing that long when you don't know nothing? And I don't know if I can do that. Either she is being contained somewhere or she's not alive. But I know Ebony, she'd have been trying to make it home. I know that.
On January 14th, 2016, Ebony Spears' parents were desperately trying to get their 30-year-old daughter some help. Ebony hadn't been acting like herself, possibly displaying signs of a mental health or medical crisis, and her family wanted to check her in for an evaluation. As Ebony's family raced to help their daughter between the afternoon of January 14th and throughout the following day, strange things began to happen, and Ebony Spears has not been seen since late in the evening of January 15th, 2016. This week, we're exploring the odd and extraordinary events leading up to Ebony's disappearance more than 3 years ago, and looking into some of the more mysterious aspects of her case. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 181 of The Vanished, Ebony Spears' Story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Prior to her 2016 disappearance, 30-year-old Ebony Spears lived in Wilmington, North Carolina with her young daughter. She had a close relationship with her parents and daughter, as well as her siblings and extended family. We spoke to Ebony's mom, Harriet, for this story, and she told us what Ebony is like as a person and what their family dynamic was as Ebony grew up.
We was raised up, normal child, the youngest of four siblings. Yeah, she was the youngest girl. I had two boys and two girls, and she was the youngest. And just a typical, normal childhood life. I mean, we wasn't rich. We didn't have much, but we did the best we could. And growing up, she was always been outgoing, you know, and always been very smart and just a good girl, basically. Well, the oldest is her brother, Terrence, and like I say, they grew up in the same household. Terrence was the quiet one, not saying too much. Graduated from high school, went off into the military, came back, and now he's here. And then the second child is a girl. Her name is Netta. Like I said, all my children was quiet. I think Emily was the most outgoing. And then the third child is Elijah, which he's a boy. And him and Emily was very close because they were like five years apart. But as they grew up, they became very close, them two.
After graduating high school, Ebony had a daughter named Anaya. She started working in the healthcare field and hoped to continue to further her career in healthcare. Harriet spoke about some of the changes in her life after finishing school.
Before she graduated, she had a child, a baby girl. But then after that, raising her child, her and me and her daddy. And so she decided she wanted to move to Georgia. So she did. But she took a year off from school. She didn't go to school right away. And then she decided, because she wanted to pursue a career in modeling. So she did get into the Casablanca Modeling School in Georgia. And that she didn't do that very long. She did get some jobs too, but she didn't do that very long because she needed income right away. So, to help take care of a child. So after she didn't do that, she went to Georgia Tech for a while. And then she stayed in Georgia. She worked at Comcast, the cable company there. And after that, she stayed there. And then when I was going to have surgery in 2010, I think, she came back home. And then she's been home ever since. And she went back to school, besides, trying to go to school and take care of mom, work, and do what any young adult do. So when she got lupus, that just tore her up. That just pushed her completely over the edge. Because when she first got diagnosed, it brought on a great deal of depression, very great deal. So, by putting them on the medicine, she gained a lot of weight, and that bothered her because she's always been a small, petite child. And got on the prednisone and all that kind of stuff. She gained a lot of weight, so that bothered her. So she couldn't hold a job because she was always sick, getting depressed. She was having panic attacks. She couldn't even go to the grocery store. She would go to the store and then she would stop whatever she was doing and call me sometimes and say, Ma, I can't do it. And I would just have to say, well, just stop what you're doing. Just leave it there. Get out of the store. And it was just like she just, besides not being able to do what she needed to do for Naya, she just couldn't do for herself. It was just that the depression was just that bad. I would have to stay with her and, pack up and stay for weeks or days or weeks and whatever, just to be there with her. Because they put her on the medicine, and if I don't remind her to take the medicine, she wouldn't take the medicine. If I didn't remind her to eat, she wouldn't eat. It just really took a toll on her.
Harriet mentioned that Ebony was experiencing some troubling health problems that she was having a hard time resolving. After struggling to find answers and continuing to face challenges like being frequently tired or feeling abnormally cold, Ebony had been diagnosed with the autoimmune disorder lupus. We also spoke to Ebony's older sister, Lynetta, and she shared what she remembered about how Ebony came to be diagnosed with lupus and how her life changed after. She told us that Ebony had been feeling sick for at least 6 months. She was weak, achy, tired, and cold all the time. She was constantly going to the doctors for testing and often ended up in the emergency room. According to Lynetta, after she was diagnosed, Ebony's attitude and outlook on life changed. She no longer wanted to hang out and party on the weekends. She became more involved in the church. It seemed like she wanted to do more with her life, and she decided to take real estate classes. Ebony's mom, Harriet, says that she was diagnosed with lupus approximately 7 months before she disappeared, in the spring of 2015. Lupus is an autoimmune disorder that causes the body's immune system to attack the rest of the body. Lupus affects your entire body, and obtaining a diagnosis can be difficult, as there's no test for it, only a list of criteria comprised of symptoms. People who have lupus may experience symptoms such as fatigue, pain in the joints, increased sensitivity to light, headaches, confusion, memory loss, and many other symptoms. Once diagnosed, there are medications to treat this disease. And according to her mom, Ebony was taking those medications.
Besides the prednisone, you know, I know she was taking some antidepressant medicine. And basically, whatever kind of medicine they gave her besides the prednisone, they gave her some other kind of medicine. I can't think of the name, but no hardcore narcotics or anything. She wasn't taking any of those.
At the beginning of the episode, I mentioned that some strange events took place in the days prior to Ebony's disappearance. While speaking to Ebony's mother, Harriet, we asked her to walk us through the incidents leading up to Ebony going missing. There were several odd things that occurred in the days prior. This is what Harriet remembers.
So it started the day before on that Thursday. He was a boyfriend at the time, or a friend, whatever they wanted to call themselves. So he called me, and because he was in another part of the town. He was up in Riegelwood, what we call another part of the town. And I think he went to a funeral somewhere. And she was at her apartment. And I don't know what made her do what she did. But anyway, he called me and he said, your daughter is riding down 7476 going to 100 miles an hour. And I'm saying, what? He said, yeah. I said, so, and I just told him, stay on your tail, stay on her tail the best you can so she can make it back to Wilmington safe. So which she did. So when she got back to Wilmington, she wouldn't go straight home. She went to the Wilmington Police Department. So we met her there, and it was just like, because we have talked about this before. If you're getting depressed, and if you can't get it together, we're going to have to seek some help. She agreed with that. So that particular day, she wasn't having it. So when we pull up to the police department, her dad went in and got an officer and told him what we wanted to do was to have her, you know, committed to behavioral health because we felt that she needed help. So EMS came, they questioned Ebony, they talked to me, and it was just like, okay, so she's answered all the questions. She doesn't feel like she needs to go. So while she was talking to the EMS, I called her therapist at the time, her doctor, and I told her what was going on. Ebony told her, I will go to the emergency room if you would meet me. But she said she had something to do, and I'm not blaming her because I guess she couldn't admit her anyway. So anyway, she said, well, I can't meet you at the emergency room. So she wouldn't go. So Ebony didn't go. So I asked the therapist, I said, well, so in the meantime, she needs the medicine. And she said, well, okay, the same medicine she's going to get at Behavior Health, I can call it into the drugstore. So, but Ebony didn't get that medicine until the next day. So once the EMS left and say they couldn't force her to go to get help, so she went home to her apartment. We all did. So we thought, okay, and her friend agreed to stay with her that night. So, okay, we thought all was well.
Even though her parents had spoken to her in the past about getting treatment if she needed it, Harriet explained why she believes Ebony was so set against it on that particular day.
And that was what threw me, because when me and her discussed it a couple of days before the incident happened, she seemed okay with it, you know? And so and then that Thursday evening, I don't know if she was scared because it actually came down to the wire that it was time that she really was losing control, because when she was getting out of her car, and I didn't hear it, but her friend said she was really upset with me, but she wouldn't talk to me. So she talked to her dad. When I didn't want to bring it up, I think she was upset with me because she knew that was what I wanted to do. And it was like, for her benefit, not, you know, but basically she got upset with me. Deep down, knowing Ebony, I knew she knew she needed it, but to accept the fact that she needed it because she just recently rekindled the relationship with the boyfriend, and she thought they were making plans to move and do stuff, and this probably was not what she wanted to hear at this particular time.
After Ebony was back home, her parents remained concerned that she needed mental health or medical treatment because she hadn't been feeling like herself for days. Ebony's parents were keeping close watch to see if she needed anything or continued to act abnormally.
Back it up a little bit, because at the beginning of that week, she wasn't feeling well, so she asked us, okay, I want y'all to take Anaya
because I'm not feeling well, and then y'all can make sure she get to school and whatever. So, you know, that wasn't a problem. So that Friday morning, I went to work, and I told her dad, you go over to Ebony's and make sure she take her medicine and make sure she gets some breakfast, which he did. So when he got to her apartment that morning, she really wasn't hungry. She said she called her friend and he was going to bring her some tea and a muffin. So he said, okay. So when he said when the friend got there, he left. During the run of a day, she had an appointment downtown with one of the a job search person where she was supposed to be meeting this lady. Her friend was supposed to take her, but he had to work or do something, but he couldn't take her because she called another friend and he took her. But he said when he got to Ebony's apartment, he said Ebony was acting strange. And we were saying, well, you know Ebony, she's acting strange. Why didn't you call? Because he was friends with Ebony's brother. Why didn't you call? He didn't know. But in the meantime, in the course of the day, she back and forth, people saying they saw this place, and she was looking distraught. So about 5 o'clock Friday evening, the young man that we know worked to the community Boys and Girls Club. So he saw Emily walking down Fifth Street, which wasn't too far from her apartment. He picked her up. He gave her a ride to the club and told her to sit there till he get back and he'll take her where she wanted to go. And where she wanted to go, I don't know. So when she got to the club, she had her cell phone with her. Her phone was dead. So she asked a couple of people that worked the club, did they have a charger, which none of them say they didn't have a charger. And so I don't know if they told her she couldn't wait there for him to come back or she just took it upon herself to leave. But she left the club and went to the Wilmington Police Department.
This is where things begin to get even more bizarre. We aren't sure exactly why Ebony went to the police department. Or even more confusingly, why no one in the police department tried to help her. This is what Harriet knows about Ebony's visit to the police department.
And she went in there and she asked them, could she use the phone? They directed her to the phone. And according to the video that we saw, she went to the phone. Then she went back to the window where the officers, the little window where the officers sit behind the window. She said something. Then she went back over there to the phone. She went back to the window and then looked like she went in another area. And they say she went to the bathroom, but she within that course of time, they say she got frustrated because the phone didn't work. They say she used, so they claim. See, we got two different conflicts each time we questioned them about Emily's time she was in there. One time they say she got irate and she used profanity at the office. And the next time we went and we questioned it, they say she was reeking of alcohol, which she was not. That's not Ebony nature. So, but my thing was to them, how many people, we asked them, how many people going to walk in a police station, walk around looking confused, and they don't confront the person? Or come behind your window and say, hey, can I help you? What can we do for you? So they back there behind the window. They not helping her. If she's cussing you, you would want to do something. So what the detective on the case say, this is quote, so the head officer that was on duty that night, she was old school and maybe she was just being nice and she didn't bother Ebony. I say, when do y'all start giving out free passes not to go to jail when someone come in a police department acting up? Oh, she was just being good that night.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Eventually, Ebony walked out of the police department and made her way back to her apartment. This is what happened next.
So in the meantime, after she walks out the police department, she leaves. And I'm thinking she went straight home, because I know she had told her dad that she was going to come over here and eat, and she didn't. So we called her when it was dinner time and asked her did she want us to pick her up, because we took the car keys. We didn't want her driving. First we called, she didn't answer the phone. So she calls back a little while later and asked me, did I call her? I said, yeah, we wanted to know if you was coming to eat. She said, oh, no, I just ate a salad. I'm good. So I said, what are you doing? I'm outside smoking a cigarette. I'm getting ready to go back in a little bit. So in the meantime, and I'm thinking she wasn't telling me the truth, in the meantime, she was walking up and down the street then. She was not at home.
The odd occurrences of the evening seemed to end there, and Ebony's parents hoped that she would stay in her apartment and get some rest. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. Around 11 p.m. that night, a friend stopped by Ebony's house to check on her, but there was no sign of Ebony.
Her friend went to her apartment. He got to Ebony's apartment about 11, and he sat there till 1, and she hadn't gotten home. So he didn't call me, he called her daughter's phone and asked, was Ebony here? So we told him we haven't heard from her. So he said, well, I'm here and she's not home. So that immediately we started calling friends, asking around for her. So nobody have seen her, nobody heard from her. Then the next day, none of her friends still haven't heard from her. She still hadn't showed up. She wasn't answering her phone. That was going straight to voicemail. So we called the police department and reported her missing. An officer finally came, took a report, and then that was it. So we really didn't talk to a detective until that Monday. So we reported her missing Saturday. We actually didn't talk to a detective to that Monday, Yeah, because it was a Martin Luther King holiday and nobody was on duty. That's what we were told. So we didn't get a response from the detective.
Harriet shared that one of the biggest frustrations she has had with the police in the search for Ebony is that because the Monday after she was reported missing was a holiday, the police department wasn't regularly staffed. So no one started looking for Ebony until Tuesday, January 19th. By that time, Ebony had been missing for several days. Harriet says that she knew long before the police started their search that something was seriously wrong.
So when we finally got up with them, they went to her house, they checked, nothing was disturbed. Nothing was messed up. And the kicker was, we knew something wasn't normal because her pocketbook was there. So she's gone, her car is there, her purse is there. So we knew this wasn't right. So that Monday, the family and the friends, we got together, we printed out flyers and we started, passing out flyers and putting up flyers through our town. So in the meantime, when the police started doing what they were supposed to do, they said they saw this guy that was outside Ebony's. He was supposed to be visiting his relative on the same apartment complex where Ebony stayed, and that he said that it was about 9:45 that Friday night, Ebony comes out of her apartment and asked, because he was standing there, and asked him, did for a cigarette. And his reply was that he told Ebony that he only had one. And so he said she made the comment, okay, well, I will go to the store and get me some. So that was the last, he so-called was the last person that saw Ebony. And mind for you, now this person is not credible at all, but they took his word for it. So he said he saw Ebony at 10:45. Her friends say he got to Ebony's house or Ebony's apartment at 11. That's 15 minutes. So the question is about the boyfriend. What route did he take to get to Ebony's house? And is the person who say he saw her at that time telling the truth? So, you know, that's bizarre.
Frustrated by the seemingly disinterested police and the questionable statement from one person who claimed to have seen Ebony, her parents formulated their own plan, partnering with a local organization that looks for missing people, the Q Center for Missing Persons.
So like you say, we got the Q involved. Detectives claim they did, police departments say they did searches. Q did searches all around the area and everywhere else that we could think of, but nobody seemed to have seen her.
Ebony's sister Lynetta also shared what she remembers from her mom reporting Ebony missing to the police, and the Q Center's instrumental help in the early stages of looking for Ebony.
You know, when my mom reported her missing, it just so happened to be a holiday weekend. So they were closed on that Monday. So nothing was really done until, I believe, like that Tuesday. So we have from Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we have a whole 3 days in between. So before they even took it serious. I just think that's where the problem came in. I really don't think they, you know, didn't really take it seriously that she was really missing or that there was a problem or there was an issue. I think they feel like she just kind of just left and she'll be back. So, you know, we'll look into it. And just 2 months time went by. Well, I think the Q Center, my understanding, the Q Center for Missing Persons were the first one to actually start looking as far as searching with the dogs and all of that. They started before the police department started. So police department didn't join until later. So as far as the police department, I can't tell you when they started their official investigation. It's hard to get any information out of them. It's hard to get a time frame, so I'm not sure exactly when they started. I know they started interviewing people sometime that following week, just from what I've heard from people that they, you know, they received calls and started doing interviews and people were calling in, giving their own bit of information. So I'm not sure when their official search started.
Once the police started their investigation on January 19th, Harriet and her husband made sure to check in frequently for updates. Here's Harriet on those first few weeks.
Besides running back over to the police department, talking to them, we went around town, putting up flyers, back and forth talking to the detective, and so they claim they talked to her friends. And you know, whatever they got from them didn't lead up to anything. So the next day, they did their searches on the horses with the dogs and wherever within surrounding her apartment complex. But then there was one young lady that said she saw Ebony with the dude that Ebony knew, but they said that this was happened before time when Ebony was missing. So we asked them to go question the young lady again, but she got in some trouble. They say she was drugged, so she really wasn't a reliable person again. And then there was another guy that we heard, the family heard, that people put out in the streets that he was the last person Ebony was with, and we asked them once he got locked up, he wasn't a reliable source because he just wanted to make a deal to get out of jail. So they didn't want to talk to him. So they just didn't do their job the way they should have done it.
You heard Harriet mention that all of Ebony's belongings, including her purse and medication, were found in her apartment. The one thing that was not there along with Ebony and has never been recovered is her phone. We asked Harriet if the police were able to obtain phone records or GPS data for Ebony's phone.
We have not found that phone. We have not. Everything was in a purse. If she had money, she might have had a couple of dollars, but everything was in her purse. They claim they tried to pin in there. That's another issue. We couldn't. The carrier took forever. They had to get a court order. And then by the time they got a court order and AT&T drug their feet to do what they needed to do for it. And one time they scared some poor little girl to death because some girl in Georgia had Ebony's old phone number when she was living in Georgia. And we called that number and the girl answered and it was just like, oh my God, this scared the poor child to death.
One of the primary frustrations for Ebony's parents is that one of the last sightings of Ebony was at the police department, and it was caught on surveillance video. The police won't release that video. However, Harriet has been allowed to view it. Further complicating this already frustrating situation is that when asked if Ebony was seen on surveillance leaving the police station, this is what Harriet was told.
She was there on that Friday. Why didn't y'all do something? And then we asked, okay, when she left the police department, what direction did she go? Oh, we don't have cameras outside. We don't know. We didn't see. They didn't follow outside. Our police department is located it's not quite isolated, but where they're located at, they should be surrounded by lights, surrounded by cameras, surrounded by everything. But they say there's no cameras. And the kicker is, and I didn't know, okay, Coupler, back in October when I was talking to the mayor and I mentioned that to him just to get his reaction, he said he didn't know the police department didn't have cameras. The mayor of the city said he didn't know the police department didn't have cameras. So I'm thinking they're not telling us the truth.
In every missing persons case, the rumors about what happened seem to run rampant. And Ebony's story is no different in that respect. Harriet shared something that Ebony had mentioned prior to her disappearance, which seems to have roots in other rumors that have spread around town about what happened to her.
One time she was telling us that she felt that someone was following her. So, and then they police department claimed that someone told the police department that when she was staying in Georgia, she robbed somebody of a large sum of money and they came after her. Emily's done been back home for almost 10 years and now all of a sudden, oh, he suddenly got out of jail. So he's come back to Wilmington to get her. Emily came back home broke as a snail. I mean, I told him, I said, come on, be for real. Whoever told you that probably is trying to get tension away from them or just wanted to make Emily look bad. Because sometimes if she worked two jobs, she worked no jobs, and her dad and I had to help her. But then, I told him, no, I don't know. But they try to run with that story. And I said, no, that ain't working. No.
I wondered if the police were able to identify the person making these allegations against Ebony. This is what Harriet had to say.
No, they couldn't. They could never find the person. No, they could never find the so-called person. Whoever told them that story didn't have a name, didn't have a face to put to nothing. They just say that she came back when she came left Georgia. She came back with a bag of full of stolen money, and the person probably done came up here and got her. So, yeah, they dragged the Georgia police in and then they talked to her, whatever friends that they can get up with down in Georgia.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. With so many different aspects of this case involving the police, I wanted to discuss the investigation into Ebony's disappearance with the Wilmington Police Department. I wanted to get their take on what the search for Ebony has entailed. We were able to interview a detective who has just been assigned to this case.
My name is Robert Pierce. I'm a detective with the Wilmington, North Carolina Police Department. I've been involved with law enforcement for right at 25 years. I'm currently assigned to the Crimes Against Persons Division in the Detectives Division, where we investigate all crimes against persons, including murder, robberies, assaults, and missing persons. All the missing persons go to the Crimes Against Persons Division. That way, if something escalates further, then you know, we have the most knowledge and the training to be able to investigate should something else arise from the missing person.
Detective Pierce shared how his department became involved in Ebony's disappearance.
There was a missing persons report that was filed by Miss Harriet Rivers, the mother, and Alfonso Rivers, the father of Miss Ebony Spears. When that report was made, there was if it's after hours, the on-call investigator is immediately notified. Once they're notified, if they feel as if it's unusual for that person, they will come out and respond and try to follow up with anything that could possibly bring that person back. You know, prior, they exhaust all their leads, I guess you would say, to be able to locate that person within a timely manner. The last known sighting of Ms. Spears was Well, the last time that the family spoke to Ms. Spears or heard from her or saw her was on the morning of January 15th around 9 a.m. Ebony was dropped off by Alfonso at her apartment. There was phone communications between them around 4:30 p.m. And on January 15th, 2016, at approximately 8 p.m., Ms. Spears was seen at the Wilmington Police Department by a front desk officer who would advise that she appeared angry and upset. Ms. Spears requested to make a telephone call, and she couldn't complete the call and was angry. She went storming off. The desk officer, prior to her storming off, asked her if she was okay and if she needed any medical attention, and she advised no, and then she left. Later that evening, around 10:45 p.m., Ms. Spears had a conversation with a gentleman in her neighborhood who gave a description of what she was wearing during that encounter. And that was the same clothing description that was shown in the video from the front desk of the police department. And this was the last time she was ever seen or heard from.
Given the description of Ebony's behavior at the police department, we asked Detective Pierce if North Carolina has laws that would have allowed the police to detain her for medical treatment, and why they didn't do that if there are laws that allow the police to make those decisions, if they feel someone could be a danger to themselves or others.
There is, in North Carolina, what we call the involuntary commitment, and it's basically you have to just be able to to show a judicial official that you feel that this person is a danger to themselves or to others. And at that time, you know, the judicial official, which is usually a magistrate, will sign off on the request if she determines that you have enough, I guess, probable cause to believe that. And then that person will be transported to our local hospital, where they'll be observed or examined by a medical professional. And from what I've read there, the desk officer didn't have that many concerns. She just said she appeared to be upset and crying. I believe is how she wrote it in the report. And she, you know, was able to ask her if she needed any kind of medical attention, if she was okay. And according to the way her report is written, it angered her, and she left. She said she didn't need any assistance, and she left.
Detective Pierce told us what the police have done in their search for Ebony, including trying to track down her missing phone and chasing some elusive rumors about someone in Atlanta.
They did obtain records. All of her phone records have been received and reviewed by investigators. And there was no activity noted from the phone after her report of being missing. It appears as if the phone was turned off. From what I know, there hasn't been any valuable leads in a long period of time. There was some leads that possibly led her down to Georgia. There was some stuff that was possibly led her to the Atlanta area. From what I understand, that all resources with the Atlanta area local police departments, Georgia Bureau of Investigations, and the FBI, all those leads were exhausted. There have been interviews. I believe her boyfriend at the time was interviewed. There is an extensive interview done with the male subject who was last saw her in her neighborhood. I do know that there was, several interviews. As a matter of fact, I was looking at some of those discs earlier today.
Finally, we asked Detective Pierce what the status of the investigation is and what anyone with information about Ebony's disappearance should do.
At this time, it's still being treated as a missing persons case. We have no evidence or anything to show any criminal activity. If anybody has any information, you can utilize our text-a-tip by texting crimes, which is 274-637, and begin your text with the tip 708, or you can call the Wilmington Police Department at 910-343-3600, and you can reference the case number of 2016-001807. The text-a-tip is totally anonymous.
Ebony's sister Lynetta doesn't live in Wilmington anymore, but she remains active in the search for her sister. She shared some of the rumors that she's heard in the last 3 years about what may have happened to Ebony.
Because I feel like some of those friends, which are mainly females, know. It seems like there's a lot of stuff that people are not saying, people are not talking. Kind of hard to just disappear like that in Wilmington and nobody knows nothing, nobody's saying anything.
Lynetta says that just prior to all of this happening with Ebony, she attended a party with some friends. She wonders what happened at that party, and if something that happened that night caused Ebony to go into a downward spiral. Adding to her suspicions, no one from that party seems to want to talk about it.
Yeah, and I've always felt like some of the close friends that she hung with, even that week, they had the party at the Hilton Hotel, and that's kind of what started the downward fall that whole week. And even the friends that were at that party, no one's saying, well, what happened? What set it off? What started, you know, her acting the way? What were y'all doing in that hotel room? So they're not even talking. So they haven't even been helpful. You know, we asked them, well, who was she hanging with? Was she hanging with any new, you know, fellas? Was she doing anything illegal? What was she doing? And nobody knows nothing. And
You know, there are two females that she hung with daily. One of them had to keep her apartment, so they were just like that close, you know. And nobody knows nothing, so I don't know what she was involved in or what they were involved in or who they were involved with, but whatever it is, it got everyone quiet. Everyone is scared to talk or whatever it is, but they are quiet. No one would say anything. Yeah, no one would say anything. No one is helpful. Nope, they won't talk to the cops. They want nothing. When I was told by, I want to say when Odom was on the case, you know, he said he felt like that they were even holding back and everyone wasn't being truthful and was not telling the whole story of what was really going on. It's definitely more to the story, but no one's talking. Good 6 months that she was gone, it seemed like every month it was something. You know, somebody heard this or somebody heard that, or, you know, they were calling the police station saying they heard this. But there were always rumors about maybe she was kidnapped and taken to Atlanta by some supposedly ex-boyfriend. That one is still kind of hanging out there from what I've heard with the police department. But of course, there were rumors that she just left. We heard rumors even for a while, like, because there wasn't a reward out for any information. I know there were at least two rumors where somebody claimed that her body had been found in a dumpster on one of the sides of town, and the police did go out there and then look. There was a rumor that she was in some kind of room in a boarding house staying in Wilmington. The police went out there as well and looked. They haven't led to anything. We had a couple of calls. We had a call from someone in Atlanta who claimed he saw a flyer and he looked like someone who was in a hospital up there. And police checked that out. It was nothing. Every so often we get these calls. Somebody say they saw her.
With some of these rumors in mind, we asked Lynetta what she thinks could have happened to Ebony.
In Wilmington, that area, I mean, sex trafficking, it's known in that area, the whole triad area from Wilmington down to Raleigh. Her location is that, you know, the port is right there, the Cape Fear River, and you got the truck stop not too far away. So, you know, I don't think she would have gotten in the car with someone she didn't know, honestly. And so the whole event to that night, you know, just make no sense. I really feel like Wilmington City, one, dropped the ball by not looking. They dropped the ball for when she was in the police station and the way that she was acting. I didn't see the video. My mom did tell me about the video. From what I'm hearing, the way she acted in that police station, she should have never walked out. I feel like she should have never left the police department in the state of mind that she was in, because I don't understand how you can walk into a police department acting the way she was acting and no one say anything to her. With her walking to that store, I just don't feel like she got into a car with someone she didn't know. And with her leaving everything in her apartment as far as car keys, pocketbook, you know, her medication, you know, stuff she would not have left out. So I just feel like she just went to that store to get the cigarette, come on back home, and that just didn't happen. But then, of course, she was paranoid that whole week of someone following her. My mom said she just never let that go. Whatever was going on, she still felt like someone was following her. Personally, feel like, you know, she was taken. I don't feel like she walked off. I don't feel like she did anything to herself. I don't feel like she would have done that. So she was able to walk all the way from the police station, make it home. You know, asking her for a cigarette, make it to the store to get a cigarette. So I don't feel like she was that disoriented. There's no way no one knows nothing. You know, no, it's just not possible. No one knows who she was hanging with. No one knows nothing. And the stories that the detectives have with the ex-boyfriend in Atlanta and the supposedly money that was taken, we don't know where that story has come from. We heard it from the detectives, and they heard it from supposedly someone else. And they know that it is an ex-boyfriend in Atlanta. They claim they know that money was taken,
that, I mean, suppose we took this money, but no one knows the ex-boyfriend's name, which is crazy to me. How do you know it's an ex-boyfriend and you not know his name? I know we had one cousin that she was really, really close with, and there were other two females that she was really close with. So those four huddled together all the time, all the time, all the time, like sisters. And so I know that they know. Whoever Ebony was dealing with, they know. But they won't say any names, no. They won't. Yeah, because we strongly, strongly feel that she definitely knows a lot more than what she's saying.
While researching this story and thinking about what could have possibly happened to Ebony, the thought of a medical crisis came to mind. We asked Harriet about this, and what her conversations and interactions with Ebony had been like in the days leading up to her disappearance.
Knowing Ebony, Ebony was the most responsible, even though she was her age, Ebony is the most responsible child I got. Me and her talked every day. We always planned stuff to do. She, Naya was her top priority. But like I was telling, when she felt like she was getting ill, she asked me to take her. Naya was Ebony's top priority. She would not just walk away and leave Anaya. If she was deciding she wanted to go away, she would say, okay, Mom, I'm going. I need to go for a while. Take care of Naya. And she knew that wouldn't have been a problem. But just to up and just take off and not tell us, that's not Ebony's nature. Because even when she was in Georgia, Ebony, she might not tell me all she did when she was down there, but we pretty much talked every day because she always called to check on her daughter. If she had a medical accident, where would she go to have it at? Why is she going to leave her apartment and go out and have a medical accident? All her medicine was home. Her purse was there. Her ID was there. Everything was in her apartment.
With Ebony missing more than 3 years now, her loved ones are left with so many questions. We asked Harriet how Ebony's daughter Anaya is dealing with all of this.
Anaya is now 16. Ooh, good days, bad days, but she's a brave little girl. She tried not to show the emotion of it, but that means being around her all the time. I know when she's thinking about her mom, and sometimes I can just be in another room and I can hear her in the bedroom crying, and I know it's just like she is at this point thinking about her mom, or she just saying that, you know, she don't want to graduate and her mom not be here. Her mom is missing the most important time of her growing up. And that really hurts her.
So what happened to Ebony on that Friday night back in January of 2016? What we do know is that she had not been acting like herself all week. According to her sister, she went to a party the weekend before, and that seems to be the beginning of her acting differently. She asked her parents to help care for her daughter because she wasn't feeling well. That Thursday, they got a call from Ebony's boyfriend saying that she was speeding down the highway, going 100 miles per hour. They asked him to follow her, and they ended up meeting Ebony in the police station parking lot. Ebony's parents wanted her to get a psychological evaluation, but that didn't happen. They had talked to Ebony before about getting treatment, and she agreed, but on this night, she was not going to do it unless her therapist could meet her at the hospital, and her therapist was not able to do that. Ebony went home, and her friend agreed to stay the night with her. Friday morning, her dad went over to make sure she took her medication and got some breakfast. Ebony planned to eat dinner with her parents later. That evening, a man who worked at the Boys and Girls Club saw Ebony walking down the road and offered her a ride. He took her to the Boys and Girls Club and told her that he would drive her to where she needed to go in a bit, but to stay there and wait for him. She began asking around to see if anyone had a cell phone charger. They didn't, so Ebony left. This is when she shows up at the police station acting erratically. She was trying to use their phone, but couldn't get it to work. She left the police station and went home. When she didn't arrive at her parents' for dinner as planned, they kept trying to call. She eventually answered and said she had already eaten. A witness claims to have spoken to Ebony at 10:45 p.m., and allegedly she asked for a cigarette, and then said she would walk to the store to get some for herself. Ebony's friend showed up 15 minutes later at 11 p.m., and waited for her until 1 a.m., but she never arrived. Harriet told us that there was only one store nearby that was open around the time that Ebony disappeared. They spoke to the clerk who said that Ebony had not been in that night. She also said that Ebony lived in a busy area and that there were always people around. But no one has come forward claiming to have seen what happened to Ebony. Everything but Ebony and her phone were found inside her apartment. There are so many questions in this case. Why had she been acting odd in the days and hours prior to her disappearance? Was there some kind of medical crisis that she was unable to communicate? Or was she afraid that her parents would force her to seek treatment? Was someone really following her? What happened at the party she had attended? And why doesn't anyone who claimed to be her friend want to talk? Is there a connection to an unknown ex-boyfriend in Atlanta? At the time of her disappearance, Ebony Spears was 30 years old. She had black hair and brown eyes. She's approximately 5'7" tall and weighs between 140 and 150 pounds. She has two tattoos, a butterfly on her right foot and a rose on her right shoulder. Ebony is in need of medication and may need medical attention. If you have any information about Ebony's disappearance, please contact the Wilmington Police Department at 910-343-3686 or 910-343-3600. You can follow Ebony's story on social media at Find Ebony Spears.
We all encourage each other and say, yes, she's alive. She's going to be home. But then some days I tell myself, you know, I don't think so. So I just pray and just have faith that she is alive and she's well wherever she is. But yeah, just right now is the key thing is just to get her back or just find out what has happened to her. Because if she's alive, we want to know. If she's not alive, we want to know.
I think the whole investigation, it just took so long to get everything started and to get it going. And that just really hindered a lot. A lot more can be done if people will come forth and just go ahead and say what they know, what happened. Because I know that they know. She didn't just disappear. They know. And whoever took her, I'm sure they would not have known that she had lupus. So all of her medication was still left in the apartment. So, you know, that medication can't get that medication without a prescription. So without that medication, she would definitely be in a lot of pain.
That brings us to the end of episode 181. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from California. Thanks for listening. Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.